superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
I'm proud to be a member of the Hall of Fame.
A sports legend is remembered by the world in his hometown.
And I'm always proud to say I'm from Superior, Wisconsin.
Plus, in solo performances and in a group, she captures the eerie sounds inspired by the lake. We'll catch up with Superior Siren.
Okay, I'm out here in a snowstorm. Why am I not wearing a coat and wearing not long sleeves? Because of Bud Grant. That's what he always did. When he was 88, he went out at that Viking Seattle playoff game to do the coin toss, sub-zero temperatures in a polo shirt. We love Bud Grant. He was all about grit, Minnesota grit, and we're going to miss him.
That's United States Senator Amy Klobuchar with one of the countless tributes to Bud Grant, the legendary coach who led the Minnesota Vikings to four Super Bowl appearances and died last Saturday at the age of 95. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. While you might expect a Minnesota politician to praise the favorite son, the accolades have come from all over, and perhaps no more so than the birthplace of the future Hall of Famer and where he first exhibited his multi-sport skills, Superior, Wisconsin. Bud Grant was born in Superior on May 20, 1927, his real name being Harry Peter Grant. He played football, baseball, and basketball at Superior Central High, and after enlisting in the Navy in the closing days of the Second World War, played the same sports at the University of Minnesota. That led to being drafted by both the NBA and NFL, for which he played respectively for the Minneapolis Lakers and the Philadelphia Eagles. He then headed north to coach Canadian football in Winnipeg, winning four championships, and then back to Minnesota in 1967 to head its NFL team. And as any Vikings fan will tell you with both pride and frustration, Grant led the team to four Super Bowls in 1970, 74, 75, and 77, losing each time. All the while, he remained a part of northern Wisconsin, keeping a cabin in Gordon for his avid fishing and hunting. That's where Stuart Bear remembers encountering him as a youngster when the coach was at the top of his game. We're speaking with Stuart Bear, who grew up in Superior and now lives in the Twin Cities. So tell me first, your father went to school with him, or at least at the same time?
Yep, my father was in school with him around the same time. My father graduated in 1941, and I think I remember reviewing his yearbook, my father's yearbook, and there was some hint on the horizon of Bud Grant. And Bud might have been in eighth or even ninth grade, but already his gift as an athlete was getting to be known in Superior.
Mm-hmm.
And he appears somehow in the yearbook. Even at that young age, I think his athleticism really came to the top, as it were.
Mm-hmm. And you had a personal encounter with him as a kid yourself.
I did. So I had a good friend of mine growing up in Superior. His name is Jimmy Green. Jim is now a youth pastor in southeastern Wisconsin. And Jim had a cabin. And Jim's neighbor in the city, a guy named Bill Blank, had a cabin right next to Jim's parents' cabin on Miles Lake in Wascott, Wisconsin. And Bill Blank was a friend of Bud Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And they would hunt and fish and do whatever you do for recreational things. Well, I remember Jimmy and I were out one day at his parents' cabin, and I think we had either come from fishing and we're going to go try to test our luck at shooting squirrels, or maybe we're checking the muskrat traps, or whatever activities that are, preteen boys are interested in. And I remember encountering on the road Bill Blank. I would have called him Mr. Blank in the day, of course, and some other gentlemen. And he must have saw Jimmy and I and thought we were quite the sight, whatever we were dressed in and whatever we were doing, and was genuinely interested in what we were doing. And that was the remarkable thing, that here was an adult, and more than the pleasantries of hi, how you doing, goodbye, he really was interested in what our day was. He asked us about how the fishing was, and if the crappies were biting on the lake, and if we tried our hand at bass. We knew they put up a big fight, and we told them we were checking traps and shooting for whatever we were shooting for, and he was just very engaging and very nice to us. And later on, after that encounter, I turned to Jimmy and I said, "Who is that guy? Do you know? Is he one of your parents' friends?" And Jimmy said, "Well, that's Bud Grant. He's the coach of the Vikings." and it's like, "Oh my God! You know, this is amazing. This is the coach of a pro football team." But he was just such a regular sort of guy, and just genuinely interested in these two pre-teenagers and what we were doing that day.
That would have been in late 60s, early 70s?
I would say so. I'd say the early 70s, probably somewhere in the 70 to 72 time period.
Mm-hmm. And of course, he was interested, as much as being interested in you, he wanted to know how to fish for biting because he was a fisherman.
Yes, my adult self now, in kind of replaying that, maybe there was some intelligence going on. You know, Bud was stoic, but kind of like a duck where it just floats across the water. You know that a lot of things are going on under the water, the duck paddling feverishly. And maybe that's a good analogy for Bud. Those steely blue eyes, there was a lot going on between those eyes, that's for sure.
Right. Well, we've been speaking with Stuart Bear, who grew up in Superior and had at least one encounter he knows of with Bud Grant. Thanks for joining us, Stuart.
Thank you. Thank you, Robin.
Bud Grant's sports legacy isn't just his alone, but preceded him through his father. Chuck Frederick of the Duluth News Tribune is the author of Leatherheads of the North, the story of Ernie Nevers and the Duluth Eskimos, about an early NFL team right from our area. We talked about Grant's familial connection to that team and Chuck's book. Chuck, you've had a few encounters with Bud Grant. I'm betting the most memorable had something to do with the cover of your book.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, when we were researching the book, I was able to go down to the training facility, the Vikings offices, just kind of rehashing old memories and talking about the olden days. And then after that, he was kind enough to provide a quote for the cover of the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, old memories weren't your memories. You were doing it as a researcher and a historian, right? So, but he actually...
you got me on that. They're not my memories. They actually weren't really his either, so much as what he remembers his father telling him all about those days.
Sure. So, I mean, his father practiced with the Eskimos, and having said it three times, the Duluth Eskimos were one of the original, were they not, NFL teams?
They were one of the early NFL teams. They weren't one of the first teams, but a couple of years into the league is when they joined as the Duluth Kellys at first, sponsored by Kelly Hardware on Superior Street. Mm-hmm. And then the last 2 years of their existence, they were known as the Duluth Eskimos. Mm-hmm. And it was a team, you know, made up mostly of just rough and tumble guys from, you know, from the docks and from the steel mill area. And they got together and they played, and while also holding on to regular full-time jobs. And Bud's dad, he did play with them, but not in any games. Mm-hmm. But he got together because he also was maintaining his employment at the time. So, mm-hmm. But Bud, to his last days, you know, he had the old leather helmet that his father wore, and he would bring that out all the time and show that off very proudly. And I think it's in the Vikings Hall of Fame now.
Uh-huh. When you contacted him about your book about the Duluth Eskimos, what was the initial response?
Yeah, he was very eager to talk about those old days and recalling the stories that his father passed on to him. And then a couple of years after the book came out, I met him again at the dedication for the new Vikings stadium. There's a display in the Vikings stadium all about the Duluth Eskimos. And I saw him at the reception for that when that was dedicated. And he was very, very kind and very, very generous with his time and very complimentary of the work that we did together. So, and the product, you know, the book that came out he was very proud of it, and that made me very happy.
Mm-hmm. I have to guess that his father's dalliance, if you will, with the Eskimos had an influence on his life.
I hate to say he was a natural born athlete because that discounts all the work he put into it, but his father's athletic achievements, you know, were certainly passed down to him, and he certainly picked up the torch and probably surpassed, I think, easily surpassed what his father had accomplished.
But he kept his helmet.
He did. He kept the old leather helmet all those years. We have pictures of it, the News Tribune. He was inducted into the Superior Hall of Fame, and he brought it along for his induction speech, and then he did. He put it on for the people as he was giving his speech, and that was kind of quite a moment. He looks a little ridiculous, but you know, but he still wore it with pride. You know, it looked a little small on him, I thought. So,
well, he was larger than life, so let's just leave it at that. Of course, it would be. We've been speaking with Chuck Frederick. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
As Chuck mentioned, Superior High School honored Bud Grant in 2013 as part of the NFL's Hometown Hall of Famers program. Ray Kosey recently retired as the school's activities director and recalled organizing that event. Welcome to Simply Superior, Ray Kosey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the Superior Telegram this week wrote that you had heard that Grant was extremely private and not very friendly, and you weren't sure how he was going to respond to the invitation. So what happened then?
Yeah, the rumors that I heard is just people in the Gordon area. I believe he had a cabin there, very private. I'm sure when he went there, he wanted to get away from things and do his hunting and fishing. And what I just heard is a lot of people that tried to go to the lake he was on, the land that next to him, he just was very protective of his property and that. So that's where I got the impression. And of course, growing up in the UP, watching Packer games, I see this man on the sidelines that just looks angry, and the leader of the Vikings. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't know what to expect when, the Pro Football Hall of Fame contacted us and said they want to come in and have this program. And we had an all-school assembly. It was great. The school let us set it up.
Hey, welcome everybody here. My name is Ray Kosey. I'm here to be friends here.
When he got there, he was so humble. He was so appreciative. He was so receptive of the whole thing. And afterwards, we had a little reception area. And what really impressed me with Coach Grant is anybody that wanted an autograph, anybody that wanted a jersey, a hat, a pitcher signed, he was willing to do that. He took a picture with anybody that wanted to have their picture taken, and he had every little kid that wanted to sit on his lap. Let him sit on his lap. So my impression of Coach Grant was one thing coming in, and when he left, it was totally different. He was a very humble guy, very appreciative of born and raised in Superior, and I think very glad to be able to be recognized in his hometown.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, he stayed in the area, as you pointed out, with his cabin in Gordon.
Yep, exactly. And I got one other situation, too, I'll just share with you. When we opened the NBC Sports Complex, then the following year, we wanted Coach Grant to come and do our coin toss for us. And I knew his son, Mike, from coaching a little bit. And I called Mike and said, hey, can you give your dad my phone number? Here's what we'd like to go. He said, well, here's his number. So Mike gave me Coach Grant's phone number to his cabin in Gordon. And when I called him there, the person answered phone, said, hey, he's out checking his minnow trap and he'll be back in 30 minutes. And Coach Grant called me back in 30 minutes. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to do the coin toss for our new complex that we opened up because he had a commitment to the Minnesota State Fair. But to my surprise, we spent probably 30, 45 minutes talking on the phone. And what really surprised me is he wanted to talk about baseball. He was more interested in our baseball field, our turf field that we were putting up. And you could just see the appreciation that he had of baseball growing up. So he just wasn't a football guy. He was an all-around athlete with obviously with basketball and playing at a high level there and baseball and football. Mm-hmm. So he didn't know me. He didn't have any reason to really talk to me. But when I called him, he was very humble and willing to listen and share his stories and ask about what we were doing at the high school.
Mm-hmm. Was it perhaps, I don't know when your dedication was, but, you know, he preferred coin tosses in like December or January at 20 below, right? So he could do it with short sleeves, right?
Exactly. You know, ours was a nice sunny day in August.
See, that's why he didn't do it.
Exactly. Like I said, right around the Minnesota State Fair. But yeah, I told you a little bit about me, a longtime Packer fan. I even got a Packer share, part-time owner, but very much disliked the Vikings. But when I got to know Coach Grant, I can honestly say I disliked him a little bit less just because of, you know, what he did. He kind of showed me a different side of him and the Minnesota Vikings, and I could truly appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you, Ray Cozy.
Thank you for having me.
You can probably imagine what that hometown Hall of Famers program at Superior High School was like 10 years ago, but you don't have to. One of our student reporters at Wisconsin Public Radio recorded it, and we found it in our archives. Here's Bud Grant himself with his speech at his alma mater on May 1st, 2013.
Well, how many of you got your letters for it already? This letter sweater states on here that I won this in 1941, Superior Central High School. And the moth hadn't got it yet. Quite an honor to be here today. And I reminisce a little bit here. You know, being raised in Superior, always, there are two things you got to do to be raised in Superior. I tell people you got to have two things. Number one, you got to have anticipation. It's going to get better. The other thing is you got to have appreciation. When it does get better, you got to appreciate it. That's how you get by living in Superior. Now, we go back a long way here. You know, that's for these young people. I don't know if you can remember your history lessons, but we entered the war in 1941, and that's when a lot of us entered this high school in Superior. So our main efforts were winning the war. It was scrap drives. It was rationing. You know, we had rationed the gas. We didn't have gas. We had to ration the meat. We had to ration coffee, sugar, and whatever. So sports were a big thing. And high school sports were what we had. But we were fortunate because the New York Giants had a training camp here prior to that and after the war. So we had some exposure to professional football. And of course, they had a little team down the way called, what is it, Bay Green or Bean Green Bay or something like that. And so we used to follow them. We didn't have any television, and so sports were a big thing. Now, I remember going over to the college where the Giants trained and watching football. Now, we didn't have the, and I don't know if you remember, but I'll remind you, I'll tell you, that baseball was number one. We all played baseball. We knew the baseball rules. We could play baseball outside. We didn't have football equipment in those days that matched what we have today. But we all played baseball. You know what number two was in those days? Boxing. Boxing was number two. And remember that Superior Cathedral had a boxing team. The college had a boxing team. The University of Wisconsin had a boxing team. University of Minnesota had a boxing team. So boxing was number two. Number three, horse racing. Believe it or not, number three in those days was horse racing. I remember going out to the fairgrounds, and harness racing was a big thing. And old Dan Patch, I don't know if you remember that name, but write it down. He was the greatest horse in that century. Dan Patch was a harness racer. As a matter of fact, he drew the biggest crowd in Minnesota, a state fair. 110,000 people came out to see Dan Patch run against himself, against the clock. They had nobody that could match him. Just a little reminder of how far we've come in sports. We're now, football is number one, no question about it. And I've been fortunate enough to grow up in that era, and remembering that Ernie Nevers came from this school, this town. Tuffy Lehmans came from this town. And the guy by the name of Ole Hogsrud from across the river had a lot of to do with pro football, bringing pro football to Minneapolis. He's a friend of my father's. And I remember the sports being as big as they were, and we spent a lot of time at a college here, and they had the great Renstrands. I don't know, you might have some relatives out here, some of the Renstrands. Mutt Mueller, Bud Engdahl, they were all big names to me. But during the war, our heroes were war heroes. The biggest hero we had was Richard Baum. He came from here, from Poplar. He went to school here. They had Joe Foss. He and Baum were in a contest to who could shoot down the most enemy planes. Baum won the contest with 40, and Joe Foss, I think, ended up with 26. Those were my heroes in the war years. Now, they had some great coaches here at the college, too. Ted Werratt was a great guy. He coached both basketball and football. Phil Orlowski, and just some of the names that helped me growing up. But the most important name that I can recall, or I will recall, is a guy named Harry Connolly. Harry was my high school coach. And there's nobody has more influence on a young person than your coach. Whether it's whether you're playing a sport, or whether you're in a band, or whether you're in a debate, or whether you're one of your teachers. But Harry Connolly was my mentor, and he coached both basketball and football, and he was a big influence on my life, steered me in the right direction, because you know in Superior, you got a lot of directors you can go, and some of them aren't always good, but Harry Connolly instilled the competitiveness and the organization, the dedication to the sport that made us all better. Anybody that played for Harry Connolly came out a better person, and that's, I think, something that I benefited from. Now, I've been involved probably over 1,000 games that I've played in high school and in college, professional basketball, football, baseball, over 1,000 games. Now, if you ask me about any of those games, I probably can't tell you much about them. But I can tell you about every game I played in high school. I remember every one. I remember the scores. I remember my teammates. The point I'm making is that these are the most valuable times of your life. I'm talking to the students now. The memories you make today, you will retain forever. The friends you make today, the teachers you'll remember, and you remember all the experience you had in high school, and believe me, make the most of it. Primarily, make good decisions. This is the time of life, you've got a fertile time of your life, fertile mind, a lot of things go past you. Make sure you make the right decisions and follow the right courses. Now, I'm proud to stand up here today and accept this plaque from Allstate and the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and to be hung in this high school. It's a humbling experience to come back to a high school and have something like this awarded to you. And I'm proud, and I thank the Hall of Fame, Allstate. I thank the school for accepting this and displaying it forever. And just let me say that I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud to be a member of the Hall of Fame, and I'm always proud to say I'm from Superior, Wisconsin.
That was Bud Grant speaking at a program in his honor at Superior High School on May 1st, 2013. Grant passed away last Saturday at age 95. Coming up, the eerie sounds of Superior Siren. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've ever taken a look out on Lake Superior and thought you saw something odd out there, you're not alone. The lake is notorious for its ever-changing panoramic patterns of waves and clouds, and this time of year, ice, that evoke any number of images, such as the sirens of Greek mythology. That's the inspiration behind Superior Siren, a group and solo project of singer-songwriter and guitarist Laura Seldner, described as an eerie folk project offering an alluring and dangerous expression of vulnerability and desire. Individually and with the band, she's had a number of albums since 2014, including her solo release last year, Kill Your Darlings. And she joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Laura Seldner.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So have you seen sirens out there, or is that you?
I don't think that I've seen one myself, but I definitely feel like a siren and try to embody a siren, and my colleagues as well.
Who came up with the idea? Or where did, before that, when did you first hear the story, the mythology of the sirens?
Yes, in grade school, I heard about siren mythology, and I have always been very connected to water. And growing up, I would go to the beach with my mom and pretend to be a mermaid. And I'm also a Pisces, so water is in my element. And when I started making music, I wanted to make something that was alluring, but also dangerous, captivating, but ominous, something that kind of crawled under people's skin and allowed them to feel something that perhaps they've been avoiding, or to help them process or heal. And so the siren theme very much fit the sound that I wanted to create.
We, of course, are Simply Superior, and I have to explain to people that's more than just Superior. It's the lake, it's the whole area. That sounds simple enough. What about you? Are there people who think that you only play in Superior? Or?
Yes, we do get that a lot. It's people ask if we're from Superior because of the name, and I explain to them that the name is based around the lake. However, one of the band members, Rachel Gobin, the cellist, she is from Superior, and the bassist, Nissa Kraus, is from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. So whenever we perform, it's usually in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
There was, I cannot remember his name, but a soloist who was performing at the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra, who told me that when he first signed up for the gig, he thought it was an adjective that this group was calling itself, the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra, that it was better than anybody else's. And of course,
right,
we know that's true. It is. and you are Superior Sirens too, I would only assume. So.
Yes.
Well, before we talk about your group, let's hear something from your solo album, Kill Your Darlings. This selection is Love Poem. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I wrote Love Poem after an argument with a lover, and our relationship was ending, and there was a lot of pain within it, and I wanted the relationship to be light and easy, but it never became that, and so I left a love note at their home, and that brought closure to our relationship.
All right, here is Love Poem by Laura Seldner as a solo act in Superior Siren.
Don't get up. I'm making my way on my own. Something to feel other than holding your heart. nothing but a hole in your heart, a hole in your heart. Stop the car, I'm afraid we've gone too far. Hit the bar, I wanna know who we are. Now I'm sitting here wishing there was something to see, deeper than the ocean and the inland sea. Sitting here wishing there was something to feel, other than a hole in your heart, a hole in your heart. Nothing but a hole in your heart, a hole in your heart. When you get home, you find the love poem written by the one who only wanted to have fun. When you get home, you find the love poem written by the one who only wanted to have fun. When you get home, you find the love poem written by the one who only wanted to have fun. When you get home, you find the love poem written by the one who only wanted to have fun.
That was Love Poem from the album Kill Your Darlings by our guest Laura Sellner. She also performs as Superior Siren, which is also the name of her group act. You told us a little about your bandmates. Can you add some more detail?
Yes. So I started Superior Siren as a solo project and then brought together a group of women to enhance the sound that I was trying to create. And there was discussion about how to adjust the name, but the music was the same for both the solo and the full band. And I thought it best to have Superior Siren be the solo and the full band project. And the band members are Rachel Gobin on cello, Nissa Kraus on bass, and Emma Diener on drums.
Mm-hmm. You have a cello and upright bass. I'm thinking that they may be classically trained.
They are indeed. Yeah, so they are classically trained. Rachel performed at UWS and Nissa was a part of jazz studies at UMD. And I believe Emma, the drummer, also has some classical training. My classical training really is only from singing in choir. I took guitar lessons and basically learned how to play chords that that I could, that my hands could shape into. And I wanted to learn songs that I liked. And so playing the guitar was really more of a way to accompany my voice and play songs that I was into at the time. And then eventually I started writing my own songs.
Well, let's hear one of the songs from the full group. How about Swamp Creature, which I'm guessing is not something you see over the lake?
Yeah, this song was one of the first that I wrote, and it was when I was discovering the sound that I wanted to create, the eerie folk sound, and it was written about a person that I loved at the time who really seemed to be of the earth and to come from the muck below the cedar tree, and so I called him Swamp Creature.
All right. Here is Swamp Creature by Superior Siren.
Creature, you
That was Swamp Creature by the group Superior Siren. We are speaking with Laura Seldner, who herself is individually Superior Siren. One of your descriptions, I think self-descriptions, is as an eerie folk project. So,
yes.
But is it folk? Considering that you have, I don't know what pure folk would be one way or the other. And of course, we got Americana running around there these days. But, yeah. You know, considering that you have a cello and upright bass and again, all this classical influence, is it genre bending or? Tell me.
I definitely think genre bending. Folk music, I think, was the easiest genre to fit into. I think that the music that we make is influenced by many genres, but folk is, I guess, the easiest way to describe it. But I wanted to add a little something else, like eerie, to make it stand out or describe more of the sound that we are making.
I'm wondering if for creating some of those eerie sounds, you ever go beyond your traditional instruments, maybe something like taking your finger and rubbing it along the rim of a glass or experimenting with something like that? Or am I giving you an idea?
No, well, you have somewhat. I really like the idea of the finger on the glass. We haven't yet. We really have been kind of mastering our craft over the years. However, mm-hmm. we are working towards another full-length album, and I would like to explore more sounds with that. I'd also like to incorporate different musicians, different string instruments, different vocalists, and dive deeper into the eerie sound.
Well, I want to get back to more of the sounds of you as the solo act, Superior Siren. But first, can you tell us where we can find out more about your music?
The website, SuperiorSiren.com, is a great resource to find performances, music, music videos, photos. Otherwise, we are on all social media platforms and appreciate any support that people can provide by following us or by purchasing our merchandise or just coming to our shows.
And that next show of Laura Seldner as Superior Siren, the solo act, is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Jade Fountain in Duluth. How about one more song from your solo album to take us out? Let's hear Release.
Yes, this song is the first track on the Kill Your Darlings EP, and it really encapsulates the vibe of the collection of songs. It's about letting go of relationships, and it can be painful when feelings or situations change, yet resisting the end of a relationship only causes more harm. So this is about releasing what no longer serves you.
All right. And on that note, we've been speaking with Laura Selner from Superior Siren. Thank you for joining us, Laura.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, there was some major activity at Miller Hill Mall in Duluth this week, but it had nothing to do with sales or shoppers.
No, it did not. Duluth's Miller Hill Mall was evacuated Tuesday morning after a roof collapse due to snow. No injuries were reported. According to the Duluth Fire Department, the collapse was reported around 9 a.m. near Applebee's. Scott Scar, manager of Barnes & Noble, said that he was preparing to open the store when he heard a loud noise and felt the building shake at about 8:55 a.m. on Tuesday. After looking through the gate at the mall entrance to the store, he saw snow in the courtyard hallway. Scar called out to see if anyone was hurt, but did not get a response. He then called 911 and the mall manager. According to a news release from the Duluth Fire Department, there was an initial gas leak at the time of the collapse, which was quickly contained by Public Works and Utilities. The gas and water have been shut off to the building, and it's currently unknown when it will be restored. A crew clearing the roof at the time of the collapse also escaped harm on Tuesday morning. One of the largest tenants at the mall is Essentia Health, which maintains a pharmacy, a fitness center, and other services there. Essential workers were trying to reschedule appointments and move them to other essential facilities while the mall is closed. The Miller Hill Mall previously had to temporarily closed some stores in February 2014 after the roof's structural integrity was questioned during another round of heavy snowfall. The roof of the former JCPenney also had to be reinforced in December 1983 during another year of unusually heavy snow and ice load.
Well, we are very fortunate that no one was hurt, and I guess this is a reminder to take the snow off of your roof. Well, we just heard all about Bud Grant being the pride of Superior in the football world, as well as basketball and a few other sports, but he's not the only local boy made good in competitive sports. A son of Brule is atop the dog sledding world.
Yes, he is. Ryan Reddington, who hails from a family of Hall of Fame mushers, reached Nome, Alaska ahead of his rivals on Tuesday to win the grueling Iditarod Trail sled dog race in his 16th try. 40-year-old Reddington completed the nearly 1,000-mile endurance test in 8 days, 21 hours, and nearly 13 minutes, led by his dogs Sven and Ghost. Reddington said, "It's been a goal of mine since a very small child to win the Iditarod, and I can't believe it's finally happened." Reddington is also a 2-time winner, of course, of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon held here in the Northland. He won those races in 2018 and 2020. His grandfather, Joe, is known as the father of Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race for his work in organizing and promoting the event in the late 1960s. Reddington's father and uncle are also in the Mushing Hall of Fame. He left Anchorage along with more than 32 mushers on March 4 and raced through single-digit temperatures along the way. He will take home the largest share of the race's $500,000 prize.
Well, and finally, the Interstate 35 reconstruction in Duluth is in full swing, or it was until workers found some human remains at the construction site.
Yes, and those remains were determined to be indigenous. They were found during construction recently, pausing work in one area of the project. The Duluth Police Department responded February 14 to the report of a possible human bone in a construction area of the Lincoln Park neighborhood where U.S. Highway 53 is being rebuilt. Police said an archaeologist was on scene when officers arrived, and the archaeologist stated the bone is a partial jawbone. The medical examiner's office was consulted, and the Fond du Lac band was advised and collected the bone. Leaders said this is the only such find during the massive multi-year project on Interstate 35, U.S. Highway 53, and Interstate 535 at the interchange formerly nicknamed the Can of Worms. Construction work began in 2020 and ramped up in 2021. Additionally, nothing was found during the highway's original construction dating back to the 1960s and 70s. Dwayne Hill, who's the district engineer for MnDOT, said the discovery triggered the project's unanticipated discovery plan, which was developed ahead of construction and consultation of Ojibwe and Dakota nations. Under the plan, work in that area stops to avoid additional burial disturbances. Security is bolstered, and proper agencies and tribal nations are informed of the find. Hill said crews working at the specific site have moved to other locations in the sprawling Twin Ports Interchange project.
All right. Native issues in our region are by no means limited to the past. On Tuesday, Sokeogon Chippewa Community Chairman Robert Van Zyl gave the annual State of the Tribe speech at the state capitol in Madison. WPR's Anya Van Weishendonk reports.
Chairman Robert Van Zyl Jr. called for mitigation of high levels of PFAS in Wisconsin waters and for an environmental impact study to be done on the so-called Line 5 oil and gas pipeline in northern Wisconsin. The Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, has sued the Canadian energy firm behind that pipeline in federal court. Van Zyl told the assembled lawmakers that there can be no economic progress in Wisconsin without a healthy environment.
Ruin those natural resources and the people will take their tourism dollars elsewhere.
Van Zyl said that the state has a tradition of collaboration between tribes and state agencies on environmental protection. And he said that without a clean Wisconsin environment, quote, everything else is meaningless. Anya Van Weichendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we've been joined by Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Superior Siren. Stay safe, everyone.
trying so hard to feel something or something that means something, trying so hard to be something for you. The idea of what it could be is always better than it should be. The idea of what it could be is always better than it should be.